systems from getting ransomwared by fileless ransomware. So this is a show all about this topic of fileless ransomware. Now, these exploits are actually not as new as you might think. It's just they've recently become more known in the forefront. Things such as the Sorbrecht ransomware is an example of some of recent threats that are using this technique. Of course, we've heard about Petya ransomware that came out recently as well. And this is all fileless ransomware techniques. And so I'm going to tell you about how these things work and then how we can mitigate the risk associated with these types of ransomware, these fileless ransomwares. And I have to say that it has historically been a set of techniques that are only accessible to organizations that can have full-time IT security staff that have at least my level of skill, which is, you know, you're pretty much looking at organizations that have 10,000 and more employees in order to have somebody like that on staff as a full-time person. But the reality is you have to have these techniques if you're going to mitigate these threats. So what can we do then in the under 10,000 user environment, and what can we do even as home users? Well, I'm going to tell you what you can do in order to mitigate these threats, because it is possible to do quite a lot of mitigation, but you have to care and you have to actually just work at it. And, you know, that's what you got to do, is just work at it. It's not easy. I never said that security is easy. It's complicated. So a lot of these things are complex and in many cases not easy to do, but they are reasonably formulaic, which means that once you know what you're supposed to do, then you can probably just go about working that list and figuring out, okay, well, I know what I have to accomplish. Let me go work on that task. And then you get that thing off of your list. And then you work on the next mitigation. All right, so let's get started. What in the world is this fileless ransomware? Well, fileless ransomware is effectively things that function as processes. So they are, the typical delivery mechanism for this, and although I'm not saying this is the only way they can be delivered, but a typical delivery mechanism is going to be somebody receives an email with a link in it that they click. It could be a spear phishing campaign. Really, it could be any sort of anything that is coming through the internet and being delivered to the end user on their endpoint. And that is oftentimes going to be delivered as a content that is coming through on a website that they simply visit. They don't even necessarily have to click on it. We really should not forget about the big Yahoo issue where they had hacked malvertisements and were infecting like 300,000 endpoints per hour. And that was all simply happening because people visited the website, Yahoo. They did not have advertisement blocking going on. And they had an outdated version of Java, which means they were not staying up to date on their software patches. So you can actually see that would have been reasonably easy to mitigate that risk. So what I'm saying is you can't mitigate these risks simply by saying, oh, I'm not going to click on links. Okay, that's baloney. That doesn't work. You have to have much more aggressive and defense in depth sophisticated techniques going on. So the way that this whole thing starts is somehow this content is delivered to the endpoint. Now, the endpoint could be your phone. It could be your Windows computer. It could be your Apple computer. It could be whatever that endpoint is. It could be your tablet, whatever it is. Then the ransomware hijacks a process on your computer that looks like a legitimate process. So as an example, a Word, winword.exe, right? Microsoft Word is a legitimate process. Now, what fileless ransomware loves to do is, in fact, word as a process, and then literally replace, do what's called DLL injection. It's going to inject its own malicious code into the memory of a legitimate process. Now, because it's able to run as a legit process, it can really now do tons of evil things. So let's say, for example, it was able to gain a certain level of access to that single endpoint. Then it's going to do something like running Mimikatz and PowerShell Empire in order to attempt to snatch the cached credentials of all users that have ever logged on to that endpoint. And then once it has these credentials, it will attempt to do lateral movement. Now, imagine the scenario where the administrator password on that endpoint is the same administrator password on another endpoint, right? So the secretary's computer, the boss's computer. Well, now they're both compromised simply because local administrator password solution was not being utilized, which is free. So there's no excuse to not use it because it's free. So there you go. I just told you one mitigation right there. That's local administrator password solution, and it's free. Use it. And if you don't have Active Directory, then just set a different local administrator password for all the computers and keep track of it in an encrypted password safe. No, I didn't say Excel spreadsheet. Okay, an Excel spreadsheet on your endpoint is not a secure password storage mechanism. If you're going to do something like that, at least keep that Excel spreadsheet someplace like a secure SharePoint where it's encrypted or something like that. But it's way better off if you can just simply have a password management solution such as the password safe, which I've got extensive documentation on password safe on the website. Feel free to pull that up and read all about how to use that. So now, this fileless ransomware that has hijacked a legit process now has credentials that it's then using to do lateral movement. What it's then going to do on the other system is inject itself again so that it now has admin access to all those other computers that it has just been able to engage in lateral movement and infect those. It creates a level of persistence, which means that if you reboot that computer, it comes back. And so it effectively reinfects what appear to be legit processes. So all of those strategies that existed in the past, all these signature-based detection, these things of looking at processes and determining, well, you know, that's winward.exe, that must be a legit process. Well, all of those techniques just go flaming right out the window because they don't apply here. You have to be using a detection technique that's much more sophisticated than just what's the name of the process. And oftentimes, by the time that the infection has occurred, you've got very, very little chance of even finding out that it happened, because this fileless ransomware also does an amazing job of cleaning up after itself, including deleting event logs, deleting all kinds of logs, and just in general deleting all kinds of any level of trace that it was ever even there. So next, it's going to do additional lateral movement using some vulnerabilities called Eternal Blue and Eternal Romance. Now, these happen to be the SMB1 CIFS vulnerability. Now, it's true, you may not be vulnerable to that simply because your computers have been patched. So yay, there we go. Now we just learned about another mitigation, right? Patch your computers in a timely fashion. But another mitigation that we could be using is just to uninstall SMB1 and CIFS, which I've already talked about on a previous show. So that's another piece. Now, then what this fileless ransomware does is, of course, now it decides it's going to encrypt your hard drive. Okay, so there becomes a problem. And it does horrible things such as hijacking your master boot record and things. So one of the things I found really interesting about this was that some of the fileless ransomware, of course, has no ability to actually hijack your master boot record if, oh, you're going to love this one, if you're using UEFI and Secure Boot. Yes, indeed. Which is why I recommended probably over 3 to 4 years ago that everybody switch to UEFI and Secure Boot and stop doing BIOS boot. So there you have it, which is, of course, another prime reason not to use Windows 7 anymore. If you're still using Windows 7 and you're using it for day-to-day operations as opposed to a very strict business requirement where you're running a business critical application that just will not run on anything else, you know, if you're using Windows 7 for your day-to-day operations, then I suggest you get a new computer. All right, so the fileless ransomware continues on with its evil antics. And, you know, basically, we've already talked about what those particular remediations would be just from the Petya, okay, the Petya ransomware. Now, if we go on to Zorbrecht as another example, it's very similar, but it's now using things like PSExec to do lateral movement and lateral infection. Of course, for PSExec to work, certain firewall ports and protocols have to be accessible. And PSExec, and the credentials in order to attach to that remote system using PSExec has to exist. Now, I'm going to publish a whole bunch of links associated with this show so that you can go into some more depth and research this if you'd like. And one of those links is literally from the creator of PSExec, who is basically, he's telling you, Mark Rusinovich is saying, you know, look, PSExec is a totally legit tool. It's wonderful in that, and tons of people use it for legitimate purposes. But you have to realize that if you're trying to also ensure that the bad guys don't utilize PSExec in your environment for bad things, then number one, you have to mitigate this lateral movement issue based upon credential theft. You know, and then you also have to close ports when it's not appropriate for those to be open. So let me go into more detail on that to kind of interpret that and make it more practical so you have a more practical understanding of what he's saying there. So number one, let's say you have a whole bunch of workstations and then you have some servers. Now your servers should be on a completely different physically segmented subnet than your workstations. Now you can have policies on the workstations that say things like, all right, from the Windows firewall perspective, we're going to allow WMI and WinRM connections and file and print sharing admin connections and like remote admin connections from the server LAN. You could even say, I'm going to only allow that to occur from a dedicated management VLAN. I think it works in both ways. But what that Windows firewall policy should definitely say is that WinRM, WMI, file and print sharing, remote admin is not allowed in terms of Windows firewall ingress connections, regardless of authentication level. From a firewall perspective on the endpoint, those connections are not allowed at all unless the traffic is originating from a very specific set of source IP addresses. So now what this is going to do is make sure that if one endpoint, one of your workstations gets infected, then those firewall policies are not even going to allow, even if the credential does get stolen, that lateral movement with credential theft literally cannot occur because of the Windows firewall blocking capability. And this is so simple to set up with GPOs, it's ridiculously easy. So, at the same time, this technique that I'm advocating does still allow you to do all of the IT management features that you want to do. Right? So that's cool. Now, the other thing that Rasinovich was talking about was credential theft. And, so you're basically needing to make sure that the admin account doesn't get engaged in credential theft, which is then exploited for lateral movement. So what I'm talking about here is Mimikatz, okay, and things like PowerShell Empire that can steal the cached credentials and utilize those to laterally move with admin level access to any other systems that it can find. So the way you mitigate that is you use local administrator password solution, or you just manually set a different local admin password on all systems. But here's another big matzo ball out there, something that I find a lot of people just seem to miss. You cannot log on to potentially vulnerable endpoints or endpoints that could become more vulnerable with something as important as a domain admin or a service account. So, for example, I oftentimes use a policy that literally specifies logon restrictions for any privileged account in the domain. So if you take a particular service account, you might find that that service account has to have admin level privileges. One of the things you could do is just not make it a domain admin and only make it an admin on those particular servers. Another approach, if it did need to be a domain admin account or something of, again, a domain level, higher privilege account, even if it's not a domain admin, specify logon restrictions. So literally on that account itself, it is hard-coded the servers that that account can actually log on to. And this is a great technique because it prevents foolish IT personnel who do not have the discipline that I have. It prevents them from being able to create a vulnerability in your environment by logging on to an endpoint where that credential should have never logged on. Now, in terms of like cleaning up your environment, it's a great idea to go through, I think literally every time an IT person has their hands on an endpoint, like all your PC technicians should be trained to do this. They should go into system properties and user profiles and literally clean up and blast away any user profile that does not need to be there anymore. And this is great because you have to realize that inside the profile, this is where the cached credentials are getting stored. So if you blow the profile away, then those cached credentials are no longer vulnerability. Now, if you're looking for the quick and easy way to fix the cached credential problem, when you know that somebody's run around and used an admin account in the wrong places, we'll change the password on the account, right? Just change the password right now. Change it now. And then you can go around and clean up profiles. Okay. So, Sorbrecht is one of those fileless ransomware pieces that does code injection. And, it's so vicious and nasty that the researchers at Trend Micro came to the conclusion that it deleted pretty much every trace of its activity and presence on the system. And this is very, very, very scary poop because this effectively means that you can't rely upon any of the detection techniques that you've historically used. And now, I want to move on to this whole topic of utilizing specialized or new logging techniques. There is a company, well, there's actually many companies out there that do logging where they will do what's called WEC. So, Windows Event Collection. You can actually configure WEC forwarders that will work in a completely distributed environment. And so now, what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about something that is now financially outside of the capabilities of the vast majority of the SMB market, where you effectively have a server somewhere. It could be on-prem, could be hosted in Azure, wherever it is, and it's effectively your event collector. But now you have to have an analytics system that's going to look through that insane quantity of log noise and bring certain alerts to your attention. Now, if you're interested in doing this, Windows IT Pro has got some articles on it. Randy Franklin Smith writes a lot of software that does this, and it's actually extremely easy to use. It does cost some money, and you do have to actually set it up, right? So that's not going to be all that effective for, I would say, for an environment of probably less than 100 people. It may not be worth the effort for them. So they need to focus on other mitigation techniques. Now, one of the things that is really great to do, that's very cheap and easy to do, is just to enable PowerShell logging. And I'm going to include a link to an article how to do that in the notes for this show. And some events to be looking for are events 4798, 4799, and these events are great for showing you, okay, here's a process, here's winword.exe. But what then did that process call? Okay, so we have winword.exe, but we now have a sub-process of winword.exe that's either PowerShell.exe or CMD.exe or PSExec, right? Something like that. So this is why you want to pay attention to in any sort of a logging, analytics, SIEM system. You want to be paying attention to events 4798, 4799, because these are going to show you what the process is and what its sub-processes were and what did it do. Now, if you're also savvy enough to turn on PowerShell logging and then collect that information, you can even see that what the particular PowerShell code was that was executed. Yeah. So in terms of tracing and tracking what was going on, you need to have active logging occurring right now with an active forwarding right now, because this fileless ransomware is so oftentimes going back and cleaning up after itself to try to prevent any sort of traces, leaving any of the history of the fact that it was there and what did it do. This is why we need to have systems in place to trace and track. Now, of course, my preference is just strictly to, mitigate, and you can do this. But there is, I mean, you basically have got no chance in heck of mitigating if you don't do the things that I've suggested already on the Breakfast Bites show for the last, oh, 10 years. You have to have a hardcore perimeter security appliance. You have to have an appropriate endpoint protection product. You need to be logging things. You can't be an admin. You have to engage in best practices, right? You can't go and cry about, oh, well, I need to see all those advertisements on the same computer that I do my banking from. No, actually, you don't. And it's not a good idea to. If you do not want your banking credentials compromised, then don't look at gambling websites or Yahoo or any other website where you think you need to be seeing advertisements. So, because there's so many advertisements that are actually malvertisements. Now, if you're going to then just block all advertisements, okay, then that's probably fine. But I find that a lot of people cry about advertisements where they wish the things in the world worked differently. Well, why can't I see this video? Well, you can't see that video because the NFL has stuffed a 45-second advertisement at the beginning of it. And if you're blocking advertisements, well, guess what? The video doesn't play at all. So what's the strategy there? Well, don't try to look at that content from the computer where you do your secure activities from. And I know that a lot of people will say, well, there's nothing on my computer that I care about. I don't do online banking. Well, here's the reality. You do actually want your computer to keep working. I know you do because you bought it, right? It's not like a disposable thing that you don't care if it's broken. And what does ransomware do? Well, it breaks your computer. So if we simply just want things to keep working, we have to do a certain amount of threat and risk mitigation just to make sure that it keeps working, right? Now, Trend has a really sweet little article they put together that talks about arrival tactics for ransomware, and I'm going to post that out there for your perusal. Trend also talks about network solutions to stopping and containing the spread of ransomware. And I want to go more into a little more detail on this because it's interesting that, Trend is talking about this from an endpoint protection approach, but yet at the same time, everything that they say is completely applicable to the network layer strategies that my firm utilizes with regards to thoroughly secure WatchGuard fireboxes. And, I would argue that in the right hands, most, I'm not going to say all, but the major brands of perimeter security appliances can be effective tools. The issue comes down to the fact that there is a very small number of humans on the planet that have adequate training and experience in constructing those network layer policies. There's a lot less of us than you think there is. And a lot of people who do have those skills are not available to anyone other than, their company that they work for with 10,000 plus employees. They're not available to the mid-market or the SMB space. They're certainly not available to healthcare providers, right? And the sad thing is, a lot of schools and universities do not have access to people with those skills either. So at the network layer, we're talking about command and control. I've talked about this before, is we have to be very concerned about egressing traffic. This is not as simple as stopping it when it comes in. It's a matter of, yeah, you need to stop it when it comes in, but if it comes in and then it tries to make an evil connection back out to the evil mothership to then download more naughty stuff or to exfiltrate your data, which, by the way, is how a lot of ransomware works. It makes this initial connection and then it reaches out to its command and control platform to download the latest and greatest naughty garbage. And it literally will not, usually will not be able to encrypt anything if that is interrupted. And how do you think that the encryption key is getting sent to them? Well, it's getting sent to them through your perimeter device, and that data will not be able to get to them if your perimeter device at the network layer is stopping that command and control channel, so then the ransomware encryption will never even occur. I'm not saying that it doesn't mean that some damage hasn't been done to your endpoint, but the ransomware will not be able to CryptoLocker, all of your stuff. Well, that's it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it, and now you know tons more about fileless ransomware.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. Support comes from Harbor Park Jazz, Rhythm and Blues, Huge Grove, Natty Nation, Terry James and the Blue Flames, and more, performing at Kenosha's Lakefront on Saturday, August 19th. Tickets at Andrea's, Tenuta's Deli, at the Kenosha County Foundation Office, or online at MahoneFund.org.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WG.